Welcome one and all to another episode here at The Damage Report. I, of course, am John Iderola. I always have been. I probably always will be. Brett, thank you for being here. That's the big change, that Brett Ehrlich is here on a Wednesday instead of a Friday, but that's the way it is and we're going with it. Thank you for being here, Brett.
Thank you. It's great to be here. Also, my new name is Clarmpius Tomthamus. That's the only change.
Clarmpius?
Okay. Clarmpius.
Yeah, are you worried that, like, cause you're a public figure, are you worried about having difficulty getting social handles for such a common name?
Yeah. That's the thing. I haven't cleared it yet, but I have some really cool ideas. Like, I'm gonna add 6'9" at the end of my name to just like no one comes up with that.
Yeah, exactly.
So it'll be Clarmpius 6'9".
Wonderful. Thank you for choosing that specific one. Yeah, isn't that weird that, like, I don't know if this used to be a thing, but now anytime you go to name something, the big determining factor is the Twitter open? Is the Instagram open? I was doing I won't be specific, but about my Patreon. And I was like, just please let the Facebook page be open or something. But anyway, that's the modern world and it's fun and we're dealing with it. We're dealing with a lot of other things too, because there is a lot of news out there that we need to get to. And indeed we will over the course of the next 90 minutes or so. We're gonna be walking you through the continued debate over student loan debt. What should be done, if anything, about it? There's a lot of different sides disagreeing. We've got more just ridiculous updates on the should have already been over process to get Ketanji Brown Jackson on the Supreme Court. Kyrsten Sinema's back in the news, so you know that's always good. And then in our last half hour, we've got some insane political ads. We've got robot waiters and we've got high school sports. A great test for those conservative defenders of women's sports. Let's see if they get as fired up about this as they do about some other stories we've covered recently. And along the way, if you wouldn't mind hitting the like button, if you're on a platform that has one, and you can send us comments, tweets, super chats and all that, and we'll respond during the breaks. But with all that said, Brett Ehrlich, are you ready to talk about some news?
I am certainly here and able to speak words, so let's give it a shot.
He brings words, the best words, and I will have words for you on the other side of this.
Well, that's what AOC was saying. I mean, not that anybody cares what she has to say in response to anything, but that was her push in response to these polling numbers and inflation and so on. She was like, you know, if we could just like stick to the agenda, get BBB passed, push this stuff through and get rid of college debt for all, you know, college students. You know, she's back. She's a one trick pony. Everything should be free. We should go back to our socialist roots. And then the Democrats won't be facing a bloodbath in November. And all these numbers will turn around. Free college for everyone. Didn't you guys have somebody pay for your college?
Okay, we're going to return to that because it turns out that she kind of did have someone pay for her college, Megyn Kelly. But I love the little slip up there of we should go back to our socialist roots. Wait, was that Megyn Kelly admitting that there are socialist roots in the United States? And also throwing out the theory that AOC doesn't genuinely want student loan debt to be canceled. It's not that Megyn Kelly is saying that that's what AOC wants. I disagree with it. She believes that this is an opportunistic strategic thing around the midterms, not something that AOC has been consistently advocating for literally years. But anyway, before we dive into the reactions, I want to give Megyn Kelly a little bit more time to make her case where she attacks the kids themselves burdened by student loan debt.
So, like, do I think now that, you know, I would have been better off if the federal government had stepped in? Look, it would have been nice, but I don't think the neighbor should have to pay for my college education. We took out loans too, and then we paid those loans back. Why should these snot-nosed kids today? I'm sorry. The ones who really need it, they can get loans, right? But like you point out, a lot of these people are going to be these sort of college Columbia elite graduates who are going to spend their years in journalism trying to shame half of America for doing absolutely nothing wrong. Why should I be paying for their college education? I don't want to.
Exactly. She doesn't want to pay for them specifically because they disagree with her, I guess. And you, by the way, if you're a conservative watching whatever that show that she does is, you might be burdened by student loan debt. Your kids, your friends might be burdened by student loan debt. And I'm sure that that pains you quite a bit. But somewhere out there, there's a kid that goes to Columbia. And wouldn't you rather own him by being owned by student loan debt managing companies for the rest of your life? You should continue to be burdened if that's what it requires to make some kid that goes to college in New York continue to be burdened by student loan debt. It's a ridiculous argument, Brett. What do you make of it?
So it's April 6th, 2022, and this is the first time that a conservative has said that rich people should pay their fair share. And it only applies to student loan debt. And she's saying that there is no world in which education should be free. But education is free in this world. Your taxes pay for it. And you might go off and pay for a private school on your own. That stuff doesn't necessarily apply to all this. But in this situation, those folks just make your decision on your own, but you still pay for public education. You still pay for public services and protections. New Mexico did this. New Mexico passed like a free college bill. It's doable. It's popular.
Yeah,
but I don't. Yeah, that's my direct point on that statement of hers.
Exactly. And look, and she made a lot of different points there, and they're all insane. So she's angry, like specifically at AOC. That's who she's attacking with this. Even though what they're responding to, which we're gonna get into more about the continuation of the pause on student loan debt repayment, is not an AOC policy. Not only did she not do it, she doesn't think that that's what we should be doing. She has a totally different solution. But Megyn Kelly, who totally doesn't care what AOC thinks about this or anything else, decides to center AOC in the conversation. Now, I'm perfectly happy to center AOC in the conversation because she's been an amazing advocate for student debt cancellation. But it's a weird move for Megyn Kelly, in addition to other weird moves. Like she says there, like, you want someone else to pay your student debt. But she goes on to say in the podcast that she had someone pay her student debt. She tragically lost her father when she was a teen, actually quite like me. In her case though, her father had life insurance and they were able to use the life insurance to pay off much of the student loan debt of herself and her siblings. Terrible experience. I don't begrudge anyone for having to go through that. But she did get someone to pay it off. So like, can't you factor that into it? Isn't it nice that you weren't burdened for so long? She says it would be nice if someone else paid it off. But why should the student government do that? All of these people who actually need it, they can get loans. But that's the problem. We're not just talking about people losing access to higher education because of the high cost. That's a very real problem, by the way. But even the people who get access via the loans will be burdened by that massively, a crushing financial debt for literally decades, like another home. They'll be paying for that. And that is going to rid them of much of their freedom, the word that you guys love to talk about, in choosing where to live, what sort of job to go after. Instead, they're gonna have to make most of their decisions based on the fact that they have to pay off these loans, and they will for much of the rest of their lives.
This is a pretty standard Republican move where you just kind of signal to some generic Ayn Randy sounding concept. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, your objective is just to maintain the hierarchy you've already set up. I understand that colleges frequently are just clubs. They're country clubs where you go meet people. Yes, you get skills, but you make connections that you can use to network later on. And maybe in certain situations, like some kind of vocational education would be better. But the reason Megyn Kelly wants to keep college expensive isn't, and all Republicans, isn't because they think it's unfair to have rich people, you know, get free college. It's because they want to make sure they keep the hedges as high as possible around the country club of power in America. And if you can go to a college based on your ability to learn and understand and ace tests there, then they've eliminated the true obstacle that they need to keep in place, which is keeping it really expensive.
Exactly. Yeah. And if you're a conservative, like Brett's totally right. If you're a conservative and you're watching this, like I don't know exactly where Megyn Kelly went to school. We could Google it. I'm guessing it was a good school. And certainly
Notre Dame.
He's gonna look it up. The other pundits, the politicians, they all went to these schools that they love to throw out there. Like they attack those schools to provide these false faux populist credentials, but they went there. And those are the people that they end up marrying. Those are the people that they work with. Those are the people they associate with. They talk at you pretending to be against the group that they are so happy that they are a part of. They are scamming you for their own benefit. And I understand it's difficult to identify that you've been scammed, but understand there's a support structure there for you if you can finally do that. We will accept you if you wake up to the fact that you're being conned by these people that are the very elites that they pretend to attack. Did you find the school?
Syracuse. She's an orange woman, Syracuse. Just like every other Republican. Nailed it.
Everyone else in this country has always figured out a way to budget for their education. And then again, it's progressivism masquerading as this is compassion. No, it's not. It's a handout to the wealthiest liberal coastal. It's like the liberal coastal elites embodied. It's the people who have taken out massive loans.
Right.
For liberal arts universities.
Yeah.
You know, and the majority of those people, they're not working class Americans. The size of these loans is okay. If you go to Columbia and you want to major in like underwater basket weaving and pay $100,000 a year for it, I mean, you have to be responsible for that decision.
Yo, it's me, comfortably entitled. I have a guy who wears sunglasses on an indoor podcast. That guy sucks.
Well,
and to say that it's supposed to be
smug,
he does come off as smug. This is just for the coastal elites. I hate to break it to you, dude. But like, this is for people who can't afford to go to college. Mm-hmm. The coastal elites already afford stuff. The ones who need to take out loans, take out loans. What you should be targeting if you're trying to like angle for this new populist right thing is to attack the institutions for making it so expensive. But you don't want to do that. You never will. You just want to signal some random ass fake intention that you have. You're going to do some random like well-testing messaging campaign. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of the day, you're going to double back and you're going to just blame, and you're not going to do anything for your own constituents, many of whom are not part of the coastal elites. And they're doing the thing you're supposed to do, which is work hard, go to college, and then come out of it with a well-paying job.
Exactly. Yeah. By the way, look, I'm not generally in favor of programs being, like means tested, because I generally see that as a way to continually take down the amount of benefit that's going out. It needlessly makes it more complicated. It usually adds a lot of paperwork and bureaucracy to the system. But at least hypothetically, if the right wing argument right there is, oh, it's just going to go to the wealthy, which we know statistically, I'm not going to run through all the numbers about student loan debt, but we know that's not true. But let's say that it was. Okay, so you limit it to a certain level of income of the family. Problem solved. Good, we can do student loan debt repayment, right? I mean, if family makes less than, let's say, $75,000, then you would have no problem with canceling, because the argument that you pretended to have right there is that it's going to go to the wealthy. You okay with that deal? You want to do that bargain comfortably, smug? No, of course he doesn't want to. And by the way, I understand maybe we focus too much on this in the program about how fake right wing populism is. Where is it? Like, when was the last time you heard an argument classified by someone who's classified as a right-wing populist that actually makes any sense under what their worldview is supposed to be? That they are, you know, they're different than us. They're not progressives. They might be socially conservative, but they care about the economic issues that at the very least conservatives face. And they will actually provide economic solutions to those. When are those going to actually materialize? Because I'm seeing nothing, not on any of these issues. They're not even pretending. It is just more xenophobia and more getting people to focus on a never-ending list of enemies so that they'll ignore the economic situation that they found themselves in.
My specific gripe with them is these folks tell us day in, day out that you need to pull yourself up by your bootstraps and work hard for a better lot in life. And they're specifically targeting, in their opposition to student loan forgiveness, they're specifically targeting poor people who want a better life. Mm-hmm. That's it. It's all BS. Like, and we shouldn't be surprised, because this is the Republican move. The way that they're calling every Democrat a pedophile out of nowhere. Do we expect them to be reasonable with anything else? And that is like their new religion. It's their new opiate, is to just get mad about critical race theory and some kind of pedophilia ring, thinking that their people can eat that. But they can't eat that. They can't turn that into something that makes their life better. What the people on the left typically advocate for is practical solutions that improve people's lives and deliver more on the promises America made.
Exactly.
As opposed to just the smokescreen that guy, his BS is so intense that he has to wear sunglasses.
Exactly. Yeah, when they march you out of your home as you're getting foreclosed on, you're gonna think, well, at least those trans athletes don't get to compete. Like, is that gonna make you feel better as you're tossed out on the street? You might have seen the Joe Biden administration is going to be extending the pause on student loan debt repayment. You can see the announcement here. It had been previewed a little bit earlier, but now the news is out there. And okay, is that a good approach to this? We're gonna see. He's getting some positive press from this. Is it nearly enough though? AOC and other progressives are making the case that this is actually a horrible idea. And I think they're right, and maybe even for more reasons than they're currently identifying. So let's jump into it. So this delay would be the sixth since the pauses began early in the pandemic. And it would come less than a month before payments were rescheduled or were scheduled to restart and affect tens of millions of borrowers, including 35 million who have not been making payments that would otherwise have been due. By the way, through all of these pauses, the good thing is not just the pause, but also that they haven't been accruing interest. So that is definitely good. 7 million borrowers in default have received a break from paycheck garnishments and other collection efforts. So especially considering the difficult times that we've had, that is great news. And Biden's thrilled with this move. He's saying to enable Americans to continue to get back on their feet after two of the hardest years this nation has ever faced, my administration is extending the pause on federal student loan repayments. I would say if you really want to help them get back on their feet, a couple month pause is something, but how about not having them continue to be terrified about the crushing debt that they're currently experiencing? But by the way, while I'm gonna disagree with just a pause, the other side, the right, they don't even want the pause, by the way. Virginia Fox is a top Republican on the House Education Committee, and here's how she greeted this news. Hardworking taxpayers are fed up with having their backs broken by this administration. The outrageous extension of this moratorium contradicts the administration's promise to the American public, and without any basis other than the president's sinking poll numbers, she called it outrageous and worried it would lead to broad student loan forgiveness. God only hopes. So, but like, look at that again. They're sick of their backs being broken. She uses as an argument for them have to resume paying their student loan debt. Their backs are broken. The solution is debt payment. And by the way, it breaks his promise to the American public. He promised to cancel student loan debt. He was voted in part because of that promise. Virginia Fox knows all of this, and he's not doing the cancellation, even though people are calling for it. And let's briefly talk about why this might not be the amazing politics that Biden thinks it is. AOC tweeted, "I think some folks read these extensions as savvy politics, but I don't think these folks understand the panic and disorder it causes people to get so close to these deadlines just to extend the uncertainty. It doesn't have the effect people think it does. We should cancel them. I've had so many people asking me, my payments are X hundred or thousand a month. What do you think is gonna happen in May? I need to make sure I delay X medical procedure or prescription, sell my car, make a huge change of repair. The limbo and uncertainty is also a strain." And so now people are gonna start to feel that strain again as we cruise towards September 1st. Is it gonna be extended again? Am I suddenly gonna be, you know, on the line for hundreds or thousands of dollars in these payments? I can see how that would be an issue for millions of people, Brett.
This is such an American politics move, by the way. Like the same with the debt ceiling, the same with continuing resolutions to fund the government. We do this really stupid thing where rather than systemically fix an issue once and for all, we just kick cans down the road. Yeah. And it's so embarrassing. It's become like the Walking Dead circa like 2016, 2014, where you're just like every episode's the same. It's all this manufactured fake, like, oh my God, the zombie's gonna get us. And then at the last second, the same kind of unexpected release happens. Maybe somebody, some character dies. And in that situation, sometimes a congressman leaves or retires or comes back, but nothing fundamentally changes. And that is so depressing. And not to mention paralyzing for people with actual real financial issues, as opposed to the people in Congress who are raking in $170,000 a year and just really need to keep this dynamic up so they can keep making that money and blame it on someone else, all the problems they face.
Yeah, 100%. And unexpected release. I noticed that you said that. I'm sure it was on purpose. Thanks for that. Now, here's the thing.
So drunk, John. That's why.
It's so early in the morning when we're filming. If you're listening to the podcast, it is early. Anyway, is this good politics? Well, I think in some ways it is better than not doing it at all. So yay, Democrats. Democrats. Better than not doing literally anything at all. Is it bad though? So here's what's gonna happen now. Instead of it resuming now, It's going to resume on September 1st, 2 months before the election. So people will cruise into the election having had to resume the payments for 2 months. No, but really, this is like the Democrat political strategy, like all in one little issue. Promise actual relief. Get elected on actual relief. Canceling 10,000. It's not my preference, but he said 10,000. That's what people expected. And then don't deliver on it. Do your little your sham study about whether you could do it, and then release a highly redacted version of the study to cover your own ass. And then like, we'll extend it for a little bit, but we're gonna make you pay. So I want you to understand the devastation that is coming in this election. So they got rid of the child tax credit. So people took that hit. They're not doing additional COVID funding. So that's gonna have its public health hit. The subsidies of the ACA are gonna break down literally a couple of weeks before the election. So people's premiums will be jacked up. They'll get those notification letters right before the election. And they're gonna be paying their student loan debt again right before the election. Oh, also they allowed the rental eviction and foreclosure moratorium to lapse in the year of the election. I don't generally like the argument that, oh, they're paid to lose, but I don't know. In 2022, Brett, it kind of looks like they're needlessly adding some major obstacles to any Democrat winning come November.
Yes, it is really stupid. It is really depressing. I will say this, that like the whole system is really set up to make it harder than it needs to be for the upward mobility they promised us America was founded on. So you either are born into a family that's rich enough to be able to go to college and it doesn't matter, right? Whether you take a loan or not, and that's great, you get to stay in the club. Or you scrimp and save to be able to attend, basically hack your way across the moat, through the jungle, through the thicket so you can get into the university. But by the time you leave it, after knowing all those people, you're saddled with so much debt that it doesn't even in the end benefit you to have gone through all that financially from a practical perspective for years and years and years. And when someone gets elected, upping voter turnout on the promise to eliminate that unnecessary burden that is way worse for this generation than previous generations, financially speaking, they jump out and mischaracterize everything and do everything in their power to keep us from having America follow through on the promises it made to its people in the first place.
Yeah, just it's such stupid politics. I'm glad that they did this, but my God, they could do so much more. And maybe it's the only Hail Mary they've got left. So anyway, we're gonna take our first break. When we come back, Tanji Brown Jackson looks set to join the SCOTUS, but Tom Cotton is gonna get in just a little bit more ridiculous attacks against her before that happens. We'll have that for you and more after this. Oh God, you cannot have a discussion about the SCOTUS without something crazy happening, as will be proven with this video.
You know, the last Judge Jackson left the Supreme Court to go to Nuremberg and prosecute the case against the Nazis. This Judge Jackson might have gone there to defend them.
Okay, so that's fun. That's Tom Cotton talking about Ketanji Brown Jackson, who every reasonable person knows and admits is fully qualified to be on the Supreme Court. She's gonna be on the Supreme Court and has been attacked this entire time as a supporter of pedophilia or critical race theory or whatever, nothing that has anything to do with her life or what she would be as a justice. Now, Senator Tom Cotton sliding at the last minute, right before she's put on the Supreme Court, to declare that in addition to having been a public defender, what she would have done with the Nazis is be an ardent defender of them. Brett, is this a fair line? What do you think?
I mean, they're calling everyone a pedophile. At least they didn't call her a pedophile. They just called her a Nazi sympathizer. The root of this is that she was a public defender, which is something that they guarantee everyone in America a right to due process. She was the person in the due process giving the thing that the founding fathers ensured people would have. And you get assigned to that as you're a public defender. You just go like, okay, today's case is this, today's case is that. The Al-Qaeda people you're talking about, they dropped the charges against them anyway.
Yeah.
So this guy is evil. Tom Cotton is thoroughly evil. He is an evil person. And I'm not just saying that because he reminds me so much of the lead character in Psycho. He is Anthony Perkins without the charm. Mm-hmm. But like, you know how crazy unhinged you have to be to go. And I love that it's prefaced with all of these people saying, listen, she is very qualified. She worked very hard to get where she is. She's a great mother, I assume. But she's a pedophile and a Nazi.
And a Nazi. Yeah,
with a straight face, they say this.
It was Tim Scott was like, I just want to recognize how historic this is that a black woman is finally on the Supreme Court, and I will not be supporting her. Then that doesn't count for anything. Then what do you think that is? He wasn't the only one. I mean, there's only three Republicans. Many of them want to be able to clip out selectively. It's good that this is happening, and I will do literally everything I can with my political power to stop it from happening. Some of them, of course, go farther. Tom Cotton is a great one there. Which is worse, being called a supporter of pedophilia or a potential defender of Nazis? I don't know. I'll throw that out to you. Weigh in below. But it is ridiculous. By the way, Tom Cotton, I personally think that everyone in every trial should get a defender. And I am in no way worried about the Nazis having had defenders in their lawsuits, because you know what? They'll still lose. You seem to think, well, if they had a good lawyer, maybe they could have gotten off and we couldn't allow that. Ridiculous approach. But you should understand that this guy who wants you to believe that Ketanji Brown Jackson is fundamentally evil, closely affiliated in some hypothetical philosophical way with the Nazis, she's evil. He said back in 2020 this: we have to study the history of slavery and its role and impact on the development of our country, because otherwise we can't understand our country. Sounds like a launching into of critical race theory. But he goes on to say, as the founding fathers said, it was the necessary evil upon which the Union was built. But the Union was built in a way, as Lincoln said, to put slavery on the course to its ultimate extinction. First of all, nobody thinks that if he had been a senator back during the times of slavery, he'd be advocating for it to be extinct. He definitely wouldn't. But he says it's a necessary evil. There was no other way, Brett. We could not have become a country except for that. So I guess it's bad, but thank God it happened.
He's so ridiculous. Like, I don't know where to start with him. And it used to be, you've heard the term pick your battles, right? Mm-hmm. Pick your battles. The Republicans are picking every battle and just making a mockery of it. Every little thing. This is the self-avowed strategy, or at least tactic, of Mitch McConnell, is to block everything, even wildly qualified Supreme Court justices. And there's no excuse for Tom Cotton to be saying any of this. He went to Harvard Law School. He clerked in the District Court of Appeal, in the U.S. District Court of Appeals. He is evil. That's why I say he's evil. This is the definition of an evil human being.
Yeah,
because he is going out there to completely mischaracterize someone, and he should get his law license revoked if this is how he characterizes the entire situation and the way that the legal process works.
That sounds damn near like a consequence, so I don't expect that'll happen. What this is effectively is just vice signaling. They don't like virtue signaling. They don't like someone saying something positive, reflecting values that improve the world, but they have to continually reassure their base that they are just as awful, just as craven, just as deplorable as they are, and that's what he's doing. And it isn't the first time, actually. Let's reset for a sec. Let's jump into this video.
What I said is that many founders believed that only with the Union and the Constitution could we put slavery on the path to its ultimate extinction. That's exactly what Lincoln said. Of course, slavery is a evil institution in all its forms, at all times, in America's past or around the world today. But the fundamental moral principle of America is right there in the Declaration. All men are created equal. And the history of America is the long and sometimes difficult struggle to live up to that principle.
And the struggle, by the way, is against people like Tom Cotton, and it always has been, it probably always will be. But sorry, that's not actually the video I meant. Let's jump ahead to this one.
Judge Jackson habitually sympathizes with criminals over victims. These are just a few of the many cases in Judge Jackson's record that all make one thing clear. If you are a criminal, you would be lucky if your case is assigned to Judge Jackson. If you are the victim of a crime or anyone else seeking justice, you better hope your case got assigned somewhere else. She seems to have a real interest in helping terrorists. Now, it's true that you shouldn't judge a lawyer solely for taking on an unpopular case, and defending criminals doesn't necessarily make someone ineligible to be a judge. But during the Bush administration, representing terrorists was all the rage in liberal legal circles. These were not unpopular cases, but instead, lawyers at liberal law firms and public defender's office fought with each other to be able to work for these terrorists.
And that is so obviously, blatantly, disgustingly ahistorical that it should be beneath even American politics, as disgusting and base as our politics is, to claim that it was all the rage, like it was like a TikTok trend. All the lefty lawyers, that they were just hot for that. It wasn't about upholding, you know, the fundamental values of our legal system. It wasn't about the belief that everyone deserves representation. It was just that they liked it. They liked the terrorism. They hate victims of crimes and love the perpetrators of it. Absolutely absurd. And this is how he wants to be remembered during this. Again, a historic Supreme Court nomination. He wants to make sure that in the inevitable documentary about it, he gets to be the evil figure. We'll see, maybe, you know, someday like Tom Holland will play him or something like that. I think he could do it justice. But it's just sick, Brett, to have to sit through this.
Tom Cotton, this guy, he's the worst. And he finds new ways to be the worst. I mean, in this confirmation hearing process, we've heard two senators say they hate that we guarantee people a fair trial.
Yep.
That's what they say. Because Lindsey Graham says, I hope they all die in Guantanamo Bay. He admits, we abandoned our legal principles to such a wanton, reckless extent that if we adhere to it in the slightest now, if we right a wrong of the past, then we make the world less safe. Exactly. That's what Lindsey Graham said. And here is Tom Cotton saying two things. One, that slavery is necessary. That's Tom Cotton. Tom Cotton, who said slavery is necessary, period. By Tom Cotton, slavery necessary. That's why his last name's Cotton. But on the other hand, he's saying that if there are lawyers involved in defending people against what might be, and that's the whole point of a trial, is to see if the prosecution is right. And as John said, if the prosecution is right, then those people get exonerated. Because why? Because they didn't do it. Mm-hmm. Tom Cotton, in saying that it is insane that there are people that represent the accused, guaranteed by the Constitution, by opposing that, he opposes America. And again, he thinks slavery was necessary.
Necessary.
Tom Cotton, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah. He loves the word necessary. Slavery was necessary. She isn't, having been a public defender, doesn't necessarily disqualify you from the Supreme Court. This is a guy who despises the American legal system, and not the injustice of it. The few efforts, the few things baked into it that actually allow for true justice. He hates it. Just because Kyrsten Sinema isn't out there giving speeches, necessarily like on video being hounded by activists, doesn't mean that she's not exerting her dark influence on our politics. I happened to buzz by Axios this morning and got to see this headline. Scoop, Sinema throws cold water on Build Back Better revival. So many of you watching this are probably like, what do you mean Build Back Better revival? That wasn't gonna happen. And look, in the end, it turns out that you're gonna be right. But there were people who were pushing for it behind closed doors. And apparently, she is privately concurring with Joe Manchin, who wants to stop this from being renewed. What many, I think, rightly consider the only chance the Democrats have to stop horrific, historic losses in the midterms, she is working behind closed doors to make sure that they fail, that they don't deliver on their promises, they don't deliver for the American people, and they get absolutely destroyed in the midterms. She's apparently going and telling her donors, the only people that she will actually talk to these days, that most of her focus is on the $10 billion COVID-19 relief bill, the so-called China competition legislation, and modifications to the Electoral Reform Act. A Sinema spokesperson, by the way, declined to comment to Axios, Axios made the mistake of not donating to her campaign first. So she wants to focus on stuff about like jitting up more tension with China. The Electoral Reform Act, fine. That's an incredibly limited thing, basically about the certification of the vote. Super, super limited, super, super easy. It's a slam dunk. She's focused on it. And maybe we get some COVID relief, which doesn't look like it's even gonna materialize, Brett. But that's what she wants to focus on, not on like the hallmark thing that Biden and the Democrats ran on in 2020.
I mean, I know. I'm looking at John's notes. I'm honestly not even mad. Like, cause what does that mean? You can't get, like, you're just past, there's a thing that's like, you know, past cure am I, now reason is past care. Like, since no one can even hope to reason with anyone.
Yeah.
There's nothing you can do, but you know, that makes me insane. And that's why after these moments where it's like, what date is it? What year is it? Cinema's still kowtowing to corporate interests to block wildly popular legislation that would do nothing but benefit average Americans in this time.
Yeah.
Same story, different day.
Exactly. The reason I said I'm not even mad, I'm not even mad specifically at her. I mean, I am, obviously. She's doing exactly what she's been doing. And she has demonstrated, as we said, a loophole in the political system. There are people who are beyond any persuasion, any ethical obligation to their constituents. She is one of them. So I can't be specifically continually mad at her because we knew that she would do this. And she has continued to do it with no additional pressure from any of the people who have an obligation to at least try, whether it's Democratic leadership, whether it's Joe Biden himself. If the people can't get through to her, and clearly they can't because they're not donating millions of dollars to her, they have an obligation to try something new. And if they keep doing the same thing, clearly with cinema, they're gonna get the same outcome. And even here, Axios is at least reporting on this. That's good considering the fawning coverage of her that they've done in the past. But even then, they talk about like the big picture. That I don't know if we're gonna have time to really get to all this stuff. And if you jump ahead of the last graphic, it's like, the bottom line is if and when she gets engaged, the talks will take on new urgency. But is that the big picture? Is that the bottom line? Like, is that the takeaway of all that we've learned from her, her single-handed nearly ability to kill the minimum wage increase, corporate tax increases? The bottom line is there will be new urgency. No, there's a big picture here, but it's about something far more fundamental than the most recent wrinkle of one corrupt senator's political activity. It is far more fundamentally about our politics, about the ability of donors to determine outcomes, the ineffectualness of even mass pressure, like in her state, where her numbers have absolutely tanked because of great work by activists there to get through to her. That's the big picture. And that's what's unfortunately being missed by so many, even those who deign to cover this ridiculous, ever-evolving story.
Right. And I think this, that the left is tearing itself apart over what to do about the inaction in Congress. I would say that trying to get the cinemas and trying to get existing congresspeople replaced with congresspeople who are more about the cause is the way to go. That's the decision that I think a lot of us have made that makes sense. And I think focusing on motivating these people and voting them out of existence, if that fails, is a good strategy, but it still needs to go within like the American system, which is single member first past the post and not just like abandoning all hope and voting for like a random third party person that just, there is literally no hope unless you eliminate one of the parties of that ever materializing.
Yeah. Okay, we're gonna take a break. When we come back, Donald Trump admits that he lost. Dramatic, or is it? We'll see. Also, a cop resigns. I'll take it. We'll have that for you after this.
$5 billion. No. We had a deal. He was going to pay $5 billion. $5 billion a year. But when I didn't win the election, he had to be the happiest. I would rate probably South Korea third or fourth happiest. China, Iran, Russia. I mean, Russia, he said to me, you're killing me with the pipeline. So he had a deal, would have happened, all set. And then when the election was rigged and lost, what happened is that the deal.
Okay, so he admitted it. He threw in the rigged at the end, but he said, I didn't win the, so we got him, right? Can we drop the balloons? Can we set off the fireworks? We got him. And like, it doesn't matter for us. But if Trump is actually admitting that he didn't win, at some point, could some of his followers catch up with that? Because if you ask, you know, the rally crowd outside of one of his little gatherings, they all believe that he won, not just that he legitimately won, but that he actually won, that he's actually president at this point. It's ridiculous, but it is true. And he admitted right there in a panel with the historians, a Princeton professor put it together. He just threw it out there a couple times as an aside, Brett, but he seems to be willing to admit that he lost. Why doesn't that matter?
Please stop. I need to, instead of stop the steal, stop the stupid. This is also stupid. Everything about politics right now is so stupid.
Yeah.
Everyone out there, all the right wingers who say that it's cancel culture and wokeism that makes it so you can't say certain very obvious truths, are so full of it when it comes to election tampering and whether Trump won. He knows he lost. He's not the president. He needs to cling to these ridiculous lies and not let anyone admit the truth. And how does the cancel culture trope apply here? As soon as anyone, like even Mo Brooks, who was at the January 6th pregame to the storming of the Capitol, he's like, we got to look forward. This is over. And yeah. Trump unendorsed the dude. Completely change it. Totally. So is Trump going to unendorse himself after he himself admitted he lost the election?
First he has to announce that he's running again, but then I guess, yeah, he's not Don anymore. He just doesn't know himself anymore. But anyway, that little panel of historians, we're going to have to see what else comes from that other than admission of defeat. And that might be, at least in the short term, if Donald Trump is consistent, and we all know that he is, because he apparently is done talking to authors. I'm going to jump ahead to the third graphic. He said, it seems to me that meeting with authors of the ridiculous number of books being written about my very successful administration or me is a total waste of time. So he said that. He said that they just do whatever they want or whatever fits their agenda. So the interviews are pointless. So presumably he won't be doing them anymore. And previously he had accidentally revealed quite a bit about his thought process in these interviews with journalists and with writers. He loves stream of consciousness, and you can't keep a close hold on your lies when you're just rambling for hours. He might have actually identified that flaw in himself, and apparently he's done. Other than these historians, and even that's making news.
And the best part, if you read like the breakdown by the, not Zoller, but some other historian, Zelizer, is the extent to which they take pains to point out that Trump chased them down to be able to talk to historians. Like for the guy who says, I don't care what anyone thinks of me, I'm above it, it's all fake news. Like homeboys sought out historians to tell them what's what. Mm-hmm. And that's why like every lawyer won't let you testify on your own behalf because it's just too dangerous and you'll self-incriminate. Trump self-incriminated here. He gave them evidence that proves that everyone needs. And if I'm the Democrats, what I do is I just make ad after ad saying, I lost the election. I lost the election. I lost the election.
Zooming in each time. Yeah, exactly. And why is this significant? I think this is what Brett is alluding to, is again, many of the things that Trump and his circle did, intent actually matters. If he knew that he lost, and especially if he knew that what he was doing is a crime, and we're pursuing both of those things, then he potentially opens himself up to more legal liability. That being said, this is America. He's rich and powerful, former president, so he's probably going to be just fine. But he is giving those pursuing him the best chance possible, considering the terrible consequence or the terrible context. Indeed. Now, with that said, we're going to move to something very different to close out this hour. So everyone, prepare yourself. I want you to meet a cop, or at least a former cop, and that's where the story gets fun. This is veteran officer Aaron Paul Nichols. You can see a photo of him right here. He is the worst for a lot of different reasons. It has nothing to do with his willingness to wear a jaunty, bold purple shirt. No, he's a terrible guy who got exposed for some truly awful social media posts. And thankfully, he's not a cop anymore. There was an announcement of an investigation into his social media activity. And rather than meet with the investigators, he bounced. He was just gone. I'm resigning. And so that resignation came shortly after the department announced an investigation. And by the way, thank you to the Anonymous Comrades Collective. This is a group of anti-fascist researchers who helped to track down his different accounts on a number of different sites. So I want to jump ahead to some of the things that he actually said. Once these researchers were able to identify that it was him, his resignation kind of proves that they were right. So some of the things he said include, when I seize power, hate crimes will be encouraged. That sucks for a cop. We know that Republicans love to mock the idea that crimes should or could be classified as hate crimes, but encouraging more of them, terrible position to have. I have metal stamps. I think I'll just stamp 1488 into every, I'm gonna say that's a blurred out N-word order I get. Easy, yeah, it was. So the 1488, if you're a sane person who doesn't dive deep into online white supremacy, is a Nazi thing. It references some groups and stuff like that. It's one of the ways they post about their white supremacy without necessarily exposing themselves to as much consequences. He then goes on to say, blank ruin everything, again, N-word. Even if it's white doing the stealing, they're likely selling the meat to black run restaurants or trading it to N-words for dope. Real talk. By the way, he was a cop up until very recently in an area that was 20% black. So he probably had many run-ins with black people who needed him to be the authority figure. We give them respect. He's supposed to do his job. Instead, he's talking about branding black people, them being culpable even for crimes that white people commit. So thankfully, consequences. Justice in America, Brett, he has resigned, but only after horrible details were released, and there's more where that came from.
I don't think he knows what real talk means. Usually you say something that makes sense and is true and is accurate, and then you say real talk. But in this situation, he is just making stuff up, insane things that, yeah, alleviate the guilt of a white person so you could find a way to blame it on a black person. And he just says real talk. Like, you have to do real talk before you say real talk. Can't just declare the most ridiculous thing anyone's ever heard, real talk, by just saying the words after it.
I mean, it's a thing that people do. Thankfully, he's not getting away with it. So here's the thing. He obviously really hates black people. But are you gonna be surprised to find out he's not a fan of Jewish Americans either? He said this. I'll say it in English. I am a supporter of as many Holocausts as it takes to cleanse this world of Talmudic influence. As many Holocausts as it takes. And he goes on to say, if I found a genie and I had one wish, the Jews would be a distant memory in 72 hours. So if he had a genie, he would wish to remove Jewish people. He would give them a few days, I guess, Brett. This is absolutely insane.
I feel like he's in a weird negotiation. Like, how many Holocausts would it take? This is the weirdest version of how many licks does it take till you get to the center of a, and it's just like
of an anti-Semite.
As many Holocausts, I'm down. Cause I'll clear my schedule for that. I won't like, I never understood why people hate Jews.
I don't get it either. Like, well, unfortunately, we're running out of time. I will say he said he hates the government, but at least now he's not a part of it. He has resigned. So great work from those anti-fascist researchers. We know that there are tons more cops like this where he came from, and only diligent research is gonna give us even a chance of consequences. Now that said, thank you for those listening to the podcast, watching on linear, but we got a lot more where that came from. So if you're on Twitch or YouTube, don't go anywhere. We'll be back in like 2 minutes. Billy B. Williams says in a super chat, today on this 13th day of this 13th month, I celebrate my first birthday as a woman. Thank you, Dragon Squad. I would never have made it this far without y'all. Special big thanks to Dresden Nova for being a hero and a friend. That is awesome. Happy first birthday. And Billy, thank you as always for being here. Musically Megs had said, 15 month member, says woot 13 months. Thanks for everything you guys do, making the news digestible even in these times. Thank you, we try, that's our main job. Like a mama bird, we pre-digest and then bring forth the news once again in a newer, chunky and wet form. Apostate said in the, I think it was the Twitch comments, Brett is the super cool guy at the party who never takes his shades off and always has an acoustic guitar handy. Brett, are you gonna play a song? We have 1 minute. What are you doing?
That's it, it's just this like.
Okay, that does sound pretty good.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.